Awakening Media presents The Four Great Imams by Dr. Hisham Al-Awadi.
Bear in mind that we are talking about a society during that time where the apparatuses, beginning from the state till the imam in the mosque and the layman in the street, these were all the institutions that were functioning in coherence and in support of each other. So Imam Malik would learn certain values from his parents. Go to school meaning the circle in the mosque, he would hear the same values. He would go to the playground to play with his friends, he will hear the same values. Because the state, through its control over the apparatuses of the city, was beaming coherent values. Today, this is not present. We have institutions, but they are contradicting each other. They are challenging each other. And that's why, if I want to be a little bit philosophical and allow me to be a little bit deep, I feel that that is why today the individual is systemized in a way to function in a pre-programmed way. What do I mean? For example, today we begin to accept the fact that, he's a teenager, he's only a teenager. Because we have been systemized, programmed, like the Matrix, to think in terms of, he's a teenager, all teenagers behave like this. But when you are 18, you can go to the bar or you can smoke, now you have reached the legal. So the state with its institutions has produced its individuals in such a way that the individuals themselves are behaving according to these expectations of the state and the society. I don't know if this is clear. I feel from studying the lives of those imams, it didn't occur to their mind that, A, I live a dual life. What I feel, I articulate it to my mother and father. There is no private and public sphere. Number one. Number two, there is no division, not just division of labor, but division of identity. Today they talk about postmodernism and fragmentation of identity, and you are female, and you are black, and you are this, and you are that. Fine. These should not function as competing against each other, but in coherence with each other. Imam Malik, for instance, did not conceive of himself as a teenager. That because I am 16,
because
these were Muslims. But here, people tend to think that because I am 16, I have to do adultery. I have to try smoking. I have to drink. I have to go out with my friends and come late at night. My mother and father has no right to tell me, where have you been? I'm a grown man now. The same with sisters. But with Imam Malik and with many of those imams, to say that my mother has influenced me is not a source of shame, but a source of pride. Because the society taught me to respect my mother as being a housewife. The society taught me to respect my teacher, even if he was black or crippled, deaf or ugly or blind. Number two, knowledge is not the
divided into time. There is no 9-to-5 business. There is no weekends, no studies, no. I study day and night, because to me, day and night means time. And time should be utilized in seeking knowledge. But now, personalities and identities begin to be perceived according to what you are. I am an undergraduate. I am a professional. I am a worker. I am unemployed. I am a husband. I am a wife. I am a father. I am a mother. To them, yes, they were fathers, mothers, daughters, sons, but that didn't mean much in terms of seeking knowledge. From the time they are young till they go to the cemetery. Now, I seek knowledge to get a certificate, to work, to be employed, to get a mortgage, to get married. They were thinking differently. Okay? So, number one, institutions and coherence within these institutions. Number two, perception of identity was different, was more constructive, was more positive, was more optimistic, was more of wanting to change and progress and prosper, and not being content with certificates, CVs, references, employment, jobs, benefits, cars, houses. No, they did not perceive progress in these terms. Abu Hanifa did not perceive his progress as being the best trader in the city. His progress was to change the life of an alcoholic and to persuade someone that Uthman ibn Affan was not a Jew. Imam Malik, rahimahullah, a fine boy who came out from a fine household, was straight away taken by a fine institution of teachers. The mother of Imam Malik, once she persuaded him to desert singing and persuaded him to go and learn fiqh, she said, go to Rabi'at al-Ra'i and learn from his knowledge. The mother is aware of the scholars in the city and she is saying, go to Rabi'at al-Ra'i, go to a particular specific scholar. And she used to prepare the turban, young boy, but prepare it because now he's a grown man. Give your child a sense of maturity. Not that you are young, you are still young. No, she would clean the turban and would put the turban on the head of her young son. And she would say to him, go now to Rabi'at al-Ra'i. One of the contemporaries of Imam Malik, when he was young, he said, I saw Imam Malik sitting in the circle of Rabi'at al-Ra'i, and there was an earring in his ears. You might be shocked to know this, but it seemed that the custom of the people of Medina, that young boys, they had earrings. When they grow up, they take their earrings. Now it's the opposite. You have Muslim brothers growing up and having earrings. Not with the circles of Imam Malik, but in the discos and the bars. But the earrings signified that he was still young, sitting with Rabi'at al-Ra'i. Who pushed him? Who encouraged him? His mother. Look, a shift and a movement from the household to the mosque. You see, household, mosque. Mosque equals neighborhood, schools, colleagues, peer groups, friends. Today, it's the household, the school, peer groups. And both are corrupt. Schools and peer groups. That's why here I have witnessed cases of a brother, Hafiz of Quran. Then he becomes addicted to drugs. There are turning points taking place, but in the opposite direction. People coming out of the household, if we assume that there was a powerful, cooperative mother and father, but become corrupted after we leave the household. But in our case, it was the household that administered the movement of their sons and daughters, and society helped them to administer and supervise, because society was providing them as a household with the institutions and with the care. So the the mother of Imam Malik does not have to go and follow Imam Malik. Where is he going? Who is he hanging around? No! She throws him at Imam Rabi'atul Rai, and Rabi'atul Rai will take care of him. In the same way that Hammad took care of Abu Hanifa, and in the same way that Imam Malik later took care of the Imam Shafi'i. Do you understand? And this is, to me, I must confess, what makes it difficult sometimes to talk about these Imams, because there is a methodological problem in trying to compare and contrast between them and us. And I feel it's unfair. Unfair on them and unfair on you. Because we are demanding radical change at a time where situation does not allow. But hold on. Hold on. What I should say to you is this. Even then, there has to be an individual effort taken on your behalf to establish whatever you could to be as close as possible to those Imams and leave the differences of institutions to be the only differences between you and them. But don't say, I can never be like them. Because there remains an area of an individual endeavor, effort, despite or irrespective of the institutions. You have Imam Malik, and we will see now how he pursued knowledge. He did it out of his personal enthusiasm. This personal enthusiasm, you can have it. In 2004, in 2020, and that is why we believe that the Ummah of Muhammad carries the khayr, carries the goodness in it. And in every 100 years, Allah sends a mujaddid. Even if there were no institutions. At the time of Salah al-Din, things were corrupt. At the time of Hassan al-Banna, things were corrupt. At the time of Mawdudi, there was colonization and occupation. Yet those people changed. They did not sit down and say, there are no institutions, there are no shiyukh, there are no this or that. No. Because then in the equation enters the tawfiq of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I don't want to be too materialistic in connecting the institutions and this and that. No, there is the tawfiq of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and He brings the mujaddid from the womb of corruption to change and to reform and to create turning points. Okay, now we talk about teachers and students. Rabi'atul Ra'i was the first scholar that Imam Malik learned Islam and fiqh from. You might say, but you said to us, Ibn Hurmuz. I say, yes. Ibn Hurmuz, when Imam Malik was dedicated consciously and seriously to fiqh, but it was the custom when people were young to go to the mosque. Like today, you go to the Mawlana, but the Mawlana did not used to beat you up if you, like it happens to. No, you go to the Mawlana, you learn the Hifz of Quran, the Arabic language, etc. So that was the Mawlana for Imam Malik, Rabi'atul Ra'i. Who is Rabi'atul Ra'i? He is called Rabi'a ibn Abi Abd al-Rahman, Rabi'at ibn Sahus. Rabi'atul Ra'i. What does Ra'i mean? Ra'i means opinion. Why is he called Rabi'atul Ra'i? Because he used to rely on qiyas, analogy, in deducting. So he was like the school of Imam Abu Hanifa. Okay? Now please, I don't want to go into fiqh, but I have to say this. When we say Ra'i, it doesn't mean that people are using their opinions. Ibn al-Qayyim said it, and Ibn Taymiyyah said it. Ra'i means, said Ra'i, is to depend on qiyas, not to depend on your hawa, not to depend on what you think based on your hawa and love for this, songs and cigarettes and this, it's makruh, it's not haram. For example, no, ra'i means that you bring all the sources of evidence and you make analogies simply because the situation at the moment you don't have enough resources from the hadith and the Quran, but you rely in your analogy on your Quran and on your Sunnah. So that's why he was called Rabi'atul Ra'i. But Imam Malik did not seem to have liked this school of thought, which is fine. At least he realized this as early as possible and shifted to Ibn Hurmuz, who represented the school of the Athar, or the school of the text, or the school that follows literally and do not rely tremendously on qiyas. I say tremendously because they did rely.
not at the outset. They would exhaust all available material, and when they fail to find whatever, they rely on qiyas. But in most cases, they don't fail. You know why? Because they are in Medina. What does this mean? Well, it means what we've discussed. Sahaba, Abdullah ibn Umar, Zayd ibn Thabit, companions, people. You can just go and knock on the door of Abdullah ibn Umar and say, what does the Rasulullah say in this situation? In Kufa, it was this. So you had to rely on qiyas. There were the Mu'tazila and the Khawarij and the Alawites and the Greeks and the Persians and this and that. Bombardment of ideas, new things coming into being. If Allah created, does Allah that? Imam Malik wasn't interested in all these things. When someone asks him, oh, where is Allah? Is he on the throne, below the throne? Where is his throne? Fancy questions that me and you today enjoy. Imam Malik wasn't interested in this. Medina is a different mentality, different setting, different than Kufa. I don't want you to side with this against that. I just want you to appreciate that there was a difference and recognize that the fuqaha were different. Because that will yield tolerance towards diversity. Nevertheless, Imam Malik benefited from Rabi'at al-Ra'i. He benefited from him in fiqh, but he also benefited from him in manners. What did Imam Malik benefit from Rabi'ah? Many things, but I will just mention one. How to dress. How to dress well. When I say Imam Malik was smart, was elegant, he venerated the hadith. When he says the hadith of Prophet Muhammad ﷺ, he must dress well, new clothes. You think this was his own idea? No. He got it from Rabi'ah. Because this was exactly what Imam Rabi'ah did. Whenever he mentions the hadith of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he dresses elegantly. Imam Malik respected a lot Imam Rabi'ah. And brothers and sisters, I tell you something. Okay, let us say the story and then we comment. Once Imam Malik was sitting with Imam Rabi'ah. The student was sitting with the teacher, and together there was another scholar that we will discuss in a minute, Ibn Shahab al-Zuhari. We will mention, because this was another shaykh for Imam Malik. Ibn Shahab asked a question. Interesting. And Imam Rabi'ah, he answered. And this is the shaykh. And Imam Malik kept quiet. Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri, he realized that Imam Malik was special, unique, although he was a young student. So he wanted to hear his answer. Just let's talk here about age groups. Let's just zoom into these three people. Rabi'at al-Ra'i is old. Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri is old. Imam Malik is young. What does that tell you? Look, these are the peer groups. These are the people he was hanging around with. Not just scholars, senior people. Thinking ahead. I can't sit with my colleagues, my 16 years old. No, these are gifted people. It's like these people who finish A-levels at the age of 12 or 13. We are talking about the same situation. We are talking about a situation where the teacher listens to the opinion of the teacher, of the student, yet he wants to listen to the opinion of the student. And look at this respect. Look at this attitude. What does Imam Malik say in response to Ibn Zuhri's comment? Ya Imam Malik, what do you say? I want to hear your view. He said, قَدْ أَجَابَ الْأُسْتَادِ. My master, the ustad, the teacher, has answered. That's it. What does that mean? Does that mean that he agrees or disagrees? We don't know. I know that the master has answered, but I want to know what is your answer. And this was exactly what Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri said. Wallahi, we will not depart from this meeting until I hear your answer. He answered in the opposite way to the fatwa of Imam Qadir. Totally opposite. Meaning what? He is wrong. And this is what I think is the right answer. You know what Ibn Shihab al-Zuhri said? He said, I think too. I agree with you that the answer is what you say, Malik. But right or wrong, this is not my concern. My concern is look at this respect for the elders when they speak. Do you speak? Do you behave like this before your mother and father? That even when they speak something that is not correct, A, do you respond in the same manner, and B, how do you correct them? Do you mock them? Do you ridicule them? Do you make fun of them? Or do you politely? If you are going to respond, you respond politely. What does that also show us? This is just a small comment. That you don't want to embarrass your teacher in public. That you don't want to boost your intellectual muscles and say, oh shit, man, I think you got it wrong this time. No. You keep quiet. And probably when Ibn Shihab goes, you discuss it with him in private. Don't embarrass your parents. Don't embarrass your teachers. Don't embarrass yourself by acting in a stupid way. Then, following Rabi'ah, Imam Malik decides to join or to adhere to the school of Ibn Hurmuz, and he adheres to him for 7 years. Who was Ibn Hurmuz? Abu Bakr Abdullah ibn Yazid. But he is famous of being called Ibn Hurmuz. He died in 762, when Malik was 55 years old. Malik adhered to him for 7 years, but continued to seek knowledge from him for 30 years. What does that mean? Well, it means you adhere to Sheikh, you adhere to someone, you don't see anyone else. But after 7 years, you continue to have links, but you travel and you meet others. And the Sheikh is not keeping hold of you. No, he encourages you. This is knowledge. This is not private property. Don't go to listen to the Sheikh. No, don't go to this camp. No, don't. Why? Let me go and see and discover. If I am weak, you shouldn't waste your time with weak people. If I'm strong, then throw me in the water and hope that I can learn to swim. Ibn Hurmuz was a non-Arab. He was a client or a mawla, a former servant or slave. He was crippled, yet he progressed in a society that appreciated the rights of minorities, the rights of the disabled, their access to knowledge, and their access to learning, and their access to teaching as well. He reached a high level among the scholars and the ulama that he was in the fourth rank of scholars in his time. The fourth rank. You know what the fourth rank? You have the first rank of tabi'in, the second, the third. He was in the fourth with people like Rabi'ah and with Ibn Shihab al-Zuhri and with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz and with Abu Ziyad, another scholar. Imam Malik remained with Ibn Hurmuz for 7 years. I don't want to repeat what I said earlier, but 7 years means dedication. 7 years means seriousness. 7 years means that it was not a matter of a mood or a seasonal link or an occasional attachment. It meant dedication. 7 years. Not 3 BAs, not 1 MA, not 3 PhD. 7 years. Not with an institution full of 30 teachers, or in a university full of 20 teachers and 40 courses, but with one teacher teaching him everything, including manners. Imam Malik used to go to Ibn Hurmuz, and this is what I was telling you earlier. There is no division of time. There is no division of when to go and seek knowledge. The moment you wake up from sleeping, from your bed, this is the time where knowledge starts. This is exactly what used to happen to Imam Malik. He says, I used to wake up in the morning and go to Ibn Hurmuz, not in the mosque, but in his house, and I would not leave his house until in the evening. No chilling out, no cinemas, no let's have a break, 10 minutes, refreshment, snacks, I need it more than you do. But I am telling you how those people were dedicated and committed. Sitting with Ibn Hurmuz for 7 years, 24 hours, or probably less, but many, many hours. Seriousness, brothers and sisters, needs patience. You have to be patient. To be something in life, you have to be patient. Imam Malik wanted to be something in life, and that cost him a lot of effort and a lot of time. He used to go and wait in front of the door of the house of Ibn Hurmuz. Just wait. He came, there was no appointment. Ibn Hurmuz might be sleeping. He would, I told you the residential areas are usually, if someone just looks like this, from as a little bit tall, he can see from inside the house. Also, from inside the house, you can see people outside the house. So he would just stay in front of the house so that he can be seen. And people would open the door for him. So today I go to your house, for example, in Ilford, and you see me. Don't phone the police. Just open the door and say, what do you want? At that time, Ibn Hurmuz would see Imam Malik and would send his slave or his servant, and he would say, there is someone at the door. Go and see who is he. And the servant would go and says, it's only the fair-skinned boy. He used to be called the fair-skinned boy, Al-Ashqar, Rudy Singh. Because in the Arabian Peninsula, you don't have a lot of people with fair-skinned. So he used to be called Al-Ashqar, Malik Al-Ashqar. And he used to say to the servant, open the door immediately, for this is the man of knowledge of his time and of his people. And the door would be open, Malik would go and enter into the house. Ibn Hurmuz was blind, so Imam Malik would not only go to his house to seek knowledge and to suck his blood, and when he's out of energy, he throws him away, neglects him. When he retires, he doesn't care about him, no. He used to go to Ibn Hurmuz, who was blind, and take him from his hand to the mosque, to the market, wherever he wants to go. Relationship based on respect, love, and service as well. What did Imam Malik learn from Ibn Hurmuz? Many things. But I mention one thing. Imam Malik, he learned to say, when he is asked a question and he doesn't know, to say, I don't know. After 7 years, he learned this valuable manner to say, I don't know. And that didn't change when he grew older and older and wiser and more famous. One person came all the way from Morocco, traveling, seeking a fatwa from Imam Malik. And Imam Malik simply said to him, I don't know the answer to your question. He said, Ya Imam, what shall I say to my people? I traveled all the way from Morocco. He said, say to them, I went to Medina, I met Imam Malik, I answered him the questions, and he said, I don't know. You see, these people were not posing to society as heroes, as famous people who knew everything. No, they were modest, humble people who happened to be fuqaha, and all people, benefit from me that which I can benefit you. But don't expect me to give you something that I don't have. If we deal with each other according to this equation, I will release you from high expectations and you will release me from embarrassment. Umar al-Farooq ibn al-Khattab رضي الله عنه used to say, لا أدري. I don't know. It's not just Zuhri, it's not just Imam Malik. It's a Sahaba. رضوان الله عليهم. So brothers and sisters, learn to say, I don't know. Or rather, more importantly, learn to be modest. Learn to be humble. Another scholar, another sheikh that Imam Malik learned from was Nafi', Mawla ibn Umar. Nafi' is different than the uncle of Malik, Nafi'. Nafi' is the client of Abdullah ibn Umar. Abdullah ibn Umar was the son of Umar ibn al-Khattab. Abdullah ibn Umar remained in Medina, and Nafi', who was his former servant, therefore lived in Medina. So he had the fiqh of Abdullah ibn Umar. And Abdullah ibn Umar had the fiqh of his father. So if you want to connect to Umar ibn al-Khattab, if you want to connect to Abdullah ibn Umar, connect through Nafi'. Who connects through Nafi'? Malik. Malik connects through Nafi'. That's why in Al-Muwatta you see narrated on the authority of Malik, narrated by Ibn Umar, because Malik met Ibn Umar. Ibn Umar, or Nafi' rather, died when Malik was only 24. So Imam Malik did not get much of Nafi', but he utilized the presence of Nafi' to learn. He didn't say, I'm too young to learn. No. From such an early age, he utilized Nafi', because he had realized that we have here a source of power, a source of information that I have to utilize. However, there was one problem with Nafi' that made him unfriendly to many people, is that he was hot-tempered. What does that mean? It means that he will only respond to your questions in the circle, but he will not be happy after the circle to entertain questions. He will not be happy like Ibn Hormuz, you knocking on his door to sit with him, because he considered himself, and truly indeed he was, extremely busy person, that he had no time to waste with anyone, and if any knowledge was to be given by him, it was in the academy, during term time, in the mosque. And it's very important, if you want to learn from people, to know their mentalities, to know how they function. Don't say that he is hot-tempered, he is antisocial. It's in your interest to learn from him and to be patient. And whatever he says, you don't answer back and say, oh, Sheikh, I love you. And be good to him. Your father and mother as well. Why do I always say father and mother? Because there is no shuyukh today that me and you adhere to. But I hope that all of us have got mothers and fathers to adhere to. Nafi' was an Arab. Nafi''s Arabic was like my English. He spoke broken Arabic. You can straight away tell that he was an Arab. Yet he was a great faqih in tafsir and in hadith and in fiqh. I envy those people who come from Turkey or from study medicine and engineering, and their English, they look at the dictionary at each word, etc. Yet when they set their exams, they get the highest marks. Language is not a problem if you dedicate yourself to studying harder and harder. And Nafi' did this, and he prospered. And he progressed so much that an Arabian like Malik would have the pleasure just to talk to him. Have the pleasure? Yes. In the circle? No. Why? Because Imam Malik was young. And Imam Nafi' did not like youngsters speaking during the circle. But Imam Malik is not young. He is gifted. He is a genius. Well, Nafi' doesn't know that yet. He died when Imam Malik is 24. So how can Imam Malik then learn from Nafi'? There is a trick. There is a trick. Tell us about that trick. Imam Malik tells us about these tricks with Nafi'. Look at this. Look at this. These people were shrewd, not in evil, not in robbing banks, not in doing crazy things and saying, yeah, man, I know everything, in corruption and deviation. No. You use your intelligence in khayr and in goodness. Imam Malik, what did he used to do? He used to say, I knew that Imam Nafi' used to be hot-tempered. He didn't like anyone talking to him. While in the house, while in the street, the only way you can talk to him, probably if you were old enough, is during the circle. So what did he do? He says, the same strategy. He says, I used to go to the house of Imam Nafi' and wait for him until he gets outside of his house. These people, by the way, used to get outside their houses 5 times a day for Jama'ah, prayer. So Nafi', you know that after an hour he's bound to get out of the house. So Imam Malik, and this is not my Indian movie trying to get you, capture your attention. This is really what used to happen. He would go behind the tree and hide behind the tree. Dinner time, when the sun was in the middle of the sky, burning everything, including the sand, turning it into red color, because we are in Hijaz in the Arabian Peninsula. And here you have everyone sleeping at home except Imam Malik waiting for his hero to get outside the house. So much that the sister of Imam Malik watches him from her house and she says, poor my brother, he's waiting under the sun for many hours. What does the father reply? Would he say, oh poor Malik, call him? No. He would say, leave him alone. He is memorizing the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It is that same father that said to Imam Malik, you have been distracted from learning the hadith because you are playing too much with the pigeons. Now he is defending Imam Malik and saying, leave him alone. إِنَّهُمْ يَحْفَظُوا حَدِيثَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. Okay, let's zoom the camera again. Watching Nafi'. Nafi' is coming outside the house. He walks. He thinks all clear. And suddenly, Imam Malik appears to him and says, As-salamu alaykum. And then he runs away. Of course, okay, fine, you're hot-tempered, fair enough, but you have to say, wa alaykum as-salam. So he would say, wa alaykum as-salam. And then he says, I would run away. He would disappear. Why? He says, to give him the impression that I saw him by accident, nothing was planned, that he happened to have gone outside the house and he accidentally saw me, and when my eyes fall onto his eyes, I said, Assalamu alaikum, and then I walked. But then Imam Malik, that is, he says, I continue to wait until he moves and walks and walks and walks to the mosque. And just before he enters the mosque, I come before him as if I am also entering the mosque to pray Zuhr. And while I am entering, I say, by the way, Ya Imam, what does Abdullah ibn Umar say in this mas'ala or in this mas'ala? What does he say in response to this event? Or what is the hukm of Ibn Umar regarding this mas'ala? And he says, Imam Nafi' would respond with an answer. He would do this every week, 2 weeks, a month, every week, every month, 2 questions, only 2 questions. And he compiles, accumulates. Hot tempered, fine. He doesn't like young people, fine. But it's in my interest to question him. It's in my interest to see ways in which I can absorb this knowledge before he passes away. So don't tell me that we lack the institutions of man. Tell me we lack the dedication and patience and the seriousness of man. Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri is another scholar that was a teacher of Imam Malik. His name is Abu Bakr Muhammad ibn Muslim. He was a tabi'i, but a young tabi'i. I.e., he saw the companions when he was young. That makes him a tabi'i. But the fact that he saw them when he was young, i.e., then passed away at such an early age, that makes him a young tabi'i. He was among the major scholars of his time, as I mentioned, the fourth rank, together with Umar ibn Abdul Aziz and Ibn Hurmuz. There are a lot of things about these scholars, by the way. There are some sites where you go and just, not go to Google, go to the site that is in Islamic history and type Az-Zuhri, and you will get massive pages about Imam Az-Zuhri. Al-Imam Az-Zuhri كان أعلم الناس بالسنة. He knew Sunnah upside down. The hadith of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He was well read. His household was full of books. Some people said that he died because the bookshelf fell onto his head, he died. I don't know whether this is true or not. Today maybe someone dies because CDs and DVDs and videos are falling off. He used to be well read. Reads a lot of books to the extent that his wife says, Wallahi, these books to me are more painful than if Imam Zuhri, my husband, was married to another free wife. Because he doesn't spend any time, probably, he's just reading and reading and reading and reading. Imam Malik took this valuable institution as a teacher. He learned from him how to be serious when you seek knowledge. Imam Malik, when he used to hear Az-Zuhri and Imam Az-Zuhri narrating some hadiths, by the way, those people, Imam Malik did not have an organizer or a laptop or anything to, yes, he has these slaves and he would write the hadith, but after that he has to memorize it. He has to memorize the hadith. This was part of why these people were significant and magnificent. And when we say memorize the hadith, it's not خيركم من تعلم القرآن وعلمه صدق رسول الله صدق. No, it's the chain of narration, which might end up with 20 names, has to be organized chronologically, and then the hadith, and when you reach the time of Bukhari, these were gifted people, genius these were. So Imam Malik, to remember the hadith, he used to have a small or a thin thread. Whenever he hears a hadith from Imam Az-Zuhri, he tries a lot. So for example, he hears three hadiths, he tries three knots. So the three knots tells me that there are three hadiths. That Imam Az-Zuhri have narrated three hadiths, and that I should now memorize them. Once he heard 30 hadiths from Imam Az-Zuhri. However, he ended up with 29 knots. He missed on one knot. He missed on one hadith. He knows all 29. Brothers, listen. This is not someone who was giving a lecture and people were taking notes or taping. This is people who were talking words that you had to memorize every single word. Can you imagine this? So there is no time to scratch your head or to look this way or to look at the watch if there were watches at that time or to ask next student sitting next to you, oh man, when is the break? No! There was no time just to memorize. Why all this pain? Well, that's them. They want to be like this. They are enjoying it. You might not enjoy it. You might think it's boring. But that's them. This means what? This means that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has selected these imams and put love for the hadith in their hearts and made them dedicated so that today we have Al-Muwatta in between our hands and we learn the fiqh and the hadith and the sharia and the ahkam because of the love and the dedication of Imam Malik. If people of the past were like us today, we would not have been in this lecture theater. Because it is them that have brought to us the ilm and the knowledge, including those that who have memorized the Quran and wrote it down. So don't undermine these people. And don't sometimes feel surprised why I am a little bit enthusiastic about them. I do love them. I do love these people. I might have reservations against a particular act. Although who am I to have reservations? But I do love them. And I do respect them. And I do want to be like them in anything that I could be like them in. And you should have these same feelings. At least out of good gesture, saying to them, thank you. You've brought us all this. May Allah forgive you. At least, this is what you can say to them. He went to Imam al-Subri and said, yes, sir. I ended up with 29 knots. He said, but I spoke 30 hadith. He said, I ended up with 30 knots. I said, yes, sir. I only missed one hadith. He said, ذهب حزب الناس. People are becoming bad memorizers these days. ما استودعت قلبي شيئا قط. I have never in my life listened or heard a hadith and forgot it. Now, when a student hears that, what happens? Compare this with another student who says, Ya Sheikh, I have ended up with 29 knots. 29 knots. Not bad, not bad. Good. You are better than those students who have ended up with 10 knots or 9 knots. No. If you want to progress in life, don't compare yourself to the people who are below you. Don't say, I got a C, it's better than those people who got a D. No. If you aim for a B, study for an A. Aim for the best. 29 not is bad. It's not good. If you want to register your name in history or Imam Malik, you should end up with 30 knots, if not 31 knots. I will mention just a final story with regards to Az-Zuhri, and then we'll move to the students, if you don't mind. View and the hadith and the sharia and the ahkam because of the love and the dedication of Imam Malik. If people of the past were like us today, we would not have been in this lecture theater. Because it is them that have brought to us the ilm and the knowledge, including those that who have memorized the Quran and wrote it down. So don't undermine these people. And don't sometimes feel surprised why I am a little bit enthusiastic about them. I do love them. I do love these people. I might have reservations against a particular act. Although who am I to have reservations? But I do love them. And I do respect them. And I do want to be like them in anything that I could be like them in. And you should have these same feelings. At least out of good gesture, saying to them, thank you. You've brought us all this. May Allah forgive you. At least, this is what you can say to them. He went to Imam al-Subri and said, Ya Sheikh, I ended up with 29 knots. He said, but I spoke 30 hadith. He said, I ended up with 30 knots. I said, Ya Sheikh, I only missed one hadith. He said, ذهب حزب الناس. People are becoming bad memorizers these days. ما استودعت قلبي شيئا قط. I have never in my life listened or heard a hadith and forgot it. Now, when a student hears that, what happens? Compare this with another student who says, Ya Sheikh, I have ended up with 29 knots. 29 knots. Not bad. Not bad. Good. You are better than those students who have ended up with 10 knots or 9 knots. No. If you want to progress in life, don't compare yourself to the people who are below you. Don't say, I got a C, it's better than those people who got a D. No. If you aim for a D, study for an A. Aim for the best. 29 knots is bad. It's not good. If you want to register your name in history, or Imam Malik, you should end up with 30 knots, if not 31 knots. I will mention just a final story with regards to Az-Zuhri, and then we'll move to the students, if you don't mind. Do you? Thank you. And Imam Malik used to, again, the same tactic, visit Imam Az-Zuhri in his household. Once there was Eid, either Eid al-Adha or Eid al-Fitr. After the Eid prayer, Imam Malik said to himself, this is an excellent time to meet Imam Zuhri. Why is it an excellent time? Because it's a public holiday. He is not busy. The students are not interested. This is the perfect time. Look how people are thinking. Look how people are thinking. He's not thinking in terms of a 9-to-5. He's not thinking in terms of term time. He's not thinking in terms of this is my Easter holiday. I go back to what I said in the introduction. Seeking knowledge is not systemized according to a particular plan to do with dunya. I don't want to set my exams in May and June to graduate. Nothing is wrong with that, but I'm saying how we function now. No, during Christmas, I would like to seek knowledge. In the Easter holiday, I would not like to watch movies. I would like to do something decent and good, something more productive. Don't worry if your peer groups or if your friends said to you, you must be crazy. Yes, I am crazy. Yes, I am crazy because I'm living with crazy people in a crazy society. No, Imam Malik in secret would go and wait before the door of Ibn Shahab al-Zuhri. And does the same tactic, moves like a policeman or an intelligence service or a mukhabarat guiding and surveilling the house. Until Shahab al-Zuhri feels that there is movement outside the house. Again, the same scenario. He asks his servant to go and watch who is there. Malik, let him in. Now, this happens at a time when Imam Malik was young. Okay? Shahab al-Zuhri immediately thought that Imam Malik is coming to celebrate Eid with Imam Zuhri. And you know, celebrating Eid, there is goat and farouz and meat and... So when Malik entered into the house, the first question that Az-Zuhri said, where did you come from? He said, I came from the mosque. I just played Eid with you. Didn't you have any food? He said, no. He understood that, no, meaning what? Meaning, if you have food, bring me, feed me. And then he called on his servant and said, okay, bring some food. And inside there are puzzles and question marks. Why is he coming? You know, it's Eid, it's public holiday. Imam Malik interrupted and said, by the way, I'm not coming to eat. I am coming to listen to you. To give me some hadith. He said, okay, bring your slaves. And Imam Malik, in Eid, imagine Saturday night or Christmas, or you have your bag with you, with your notes and with your revised whatever, and what are you doing? Enjoy yourself. Don't work hard. Enjoy yourself. Fine, enjoy yourself, but how? How do you enjoy yourself? He has the slaves with him. He brings out the slaves during Eid and says, Hadithni ya Sheikh. And Sheikh starts to give him hadith, and he gives him 30 hadiths. And then he writes them down, and he says, Ya Sheikh, I memorized them. These are gifted people. He didn't say, Ya Sheikh, give me 1 month, I'll memorize them, come back to you. No, there is no time. Everyone memorize them in 1 month. If you want to be unique, or Imam Malik, for us to speak about you, you have to be unique. We don't speak about anyone. We have only four imams to speak about. He said, I memorized them all. He said, what? He said, yes, I memorized them all. He said, bring me the slates. Give me the slates. He took the slates. He said, okay, tell me. And he read all out of memory, all the 30 hadiths. Ibn Shihab al-Zuhri said, قُمْ فَأَنْتَ مِنْ أَوْعِيَةِ الْعِلْمِ. Go home, my son. You are a container of knowledge. If you can memorize 30 hadiths, it's not that these 30 hadiths are important or not. The fact that they are 30 hadiths, the chain of narrations, memorized in 5 minutes, that means that you are talking, oh, al-Zuhri, to a container of knowledge, a genius. Among the shuyukh of Imam Malik was Ja'far al-Sadiq and Muhammad ibn al-Munkadir. Both of them, I put them under one title, people who cared more about their inner dimension and their spirituality. Imam Malik says, I have never met Ja'far al-Sadiq and have not seen him doing either of three things. He's either praying or fasting or reading the Quran. Very important for youngsters to engage with these youth. You know, if you are looking for a role model and seeing the role model is greedy, is lying, he gives beautiful ceremonies in the mosque, but he sells off license shop and top shelf magazines, and he is dealing with interest, and he eats from the haram, and he mistreats his wife, or that his household is corrupt. Knowledge, brothers and sisters, or rather respect, does not come only from the fact that you are knowledgeable, but comes from the fact of knowing how did knowledge affect your attitude and behavior. So Ja'far al-Sadiq was that institution of spirituality. You know, brothers and sisters, there are people that just when you look at them, you feel comfortable and relaxed. You feel inner peace. Ja'far al-Sadiq was among those people. He died at the age of 68. And so as Muhammad ibn al-Munkadir. Whenever he hears the hadith of Prophet Muhammad ﷺ, Muhammad ibn al-Munkadir, he cries. He cries. He was asked once, Muhammad ibn al-Munkadir, what is the best action? He said, to make someone happy. It comes to Ruhi al-Mu'min. To make your brother happy. To make your sister happy. Now, the students. Now, the product of Imam Malik based on the institutions that he was a member of. I will mention very quickly two major students. Abdurrahman ibn al-Qasim. He was with Imam Malik for 20 years. Died at the age of 63 in Egypt in year 805. Abdurrahman ibn al-Qasim differed with Imam Malik not just in fiqh, which if anything shows this independent mindedness that the students of the Great One had, but also differed with him in lifestyles, in political attitudes and views. Where Imam Malik accepted gifts from the Khalifas, Ibn al-Qasim rejected gifts from the Khalifas. He says something that is fascinating to me and very relevant to us today. He said, don't be free yet a slave. They said, how can you be free yet a slave? He said, when you have too many friends, that you begin to have loyalty to some of them and begin to become subordinated by this love to them, that you begin to take same positions, same attitudes, even when those brothers rage war against your other brothers, you enter the war with those brothers against your other brothers. You are free, yet you are safe. Today, I feel some of our students, I don't want to use the word slaves, but this peer pressure group, even in Islamic terms, you might be my brother, and I say to you, let's go and visit Sheikh so-and-so. You say, oh man, no, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to him tomorrow. I say, okay, where is the freedom here? No, sorry, I have to go and see this. I need to do it. So, he's warning us against too much interaction. That yes, based in love, but it will make you subordinated by this love. Never be subordinated and undermined by love except the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Not the love of your husband, wife, children, dunya, wealth, be free, free-minded. The final student, to me, he's my beloved one. I am fascinated by this example, Abdullah ibn Wahab. He died at the age of 72. He was called Bahr al-Ulum, the sea of knowledge. Not the fountain, but the sea of knowledge. Malik used to love him so much, and he used to love Malik so much. He says something that is amazing. He says, I remained and adhered to Imam Malik for 20 years. I learned the fiqh of Imam Malik in 1 year, and I learned manners from Malik in the rest of the 19 years. And this is amazing. He writes what's coming next. He says, and I wished the entire 20 years were dedicated to learning the manners of Imam Malik. I am here trying to make a fool of myself and explain the manners of Imam Malik in 45 minutes. Abdullah ibn Wahab says to us, behave yourselves. It took me 19 years to learn the manners of Imam Malik and 1 year to learn the hadith of Prophet Muhammad through Imam Malik. Of course, he's being modest because he is called the sea of knowledge. And whenever you wanted to know or understand the fiqh of Imam Malik, Abdullah ibn Wahab is the gate for the madhab. Yet, this is out of modesty to show us young generations that it's not just knowledge what makes human beings decent human beings, but it's the manner, the akhlaq, the attitude. I will end with this story with Abdullah ibn Wahab. Abdullah ibn Wahab was a young boy when he joined the circle of Imam Malik. In our age, he came all the way from Egypt, and that's why he's called Abdullah ibn Wahab al-Masri, the Egyptian one. He came all the way from Egypt to Medina just to sit with Imam Malik and learn from Imam Malik. Once upon a time, when he was in the circle, a large elephant walked past the mosque. Not inside the mosque, but past the mosque. The students could see the elephant, not a small mouse, an elephant walking past the gate of the mosque. And people of Medina have never in their lives seen elephants. So they don't know what is an elephant. They heard, أَلَمْ تَرَ كَيْفَ فَعَلَ رَبُّكَ بِأَصْحَابِ الْفِيلِ. Yeah, they can imagine. But seeing an elephant, what happened when they saw the elephant, just the tail probably of the elephant, they all jumped from the circle, left Imam Malik and went through the gate, fascinated by the image of the elephant, except Abdullah ibn Wahab. He remained seated. Imam Malik said to him, why didn't you disperse with the rest of the students to see the elephant? He said to him, مَا جِئْتُ مِنْ مِصْرَ كَيْ أَرَى الْفِيلِ وَإِنَّمَا جِئْتُ كَيْ أَرَى مَالِكِ. I did not come from Egypt all the way to see the elephant. I came to see you. Now, if I tell you that, I don't know, maybe different people for different people. If X was passing through this door, I don't know how many people will jump and go. And once I went to Cambridge to give a talk on theory. And I came all the way from Exeter to give the talk. And there were probably no one in the lecture except three or four people. And those three or four people were going like this. Most of them, I said to him, brother, it seems people, the audience are tired and the rest of them haven't come. He says, yes, brother, I know. It's, you know, it's the World Cup these days. And yesterday it was England. And he started to quote me the names of the players and who scored the goal. And said, okay, how about delaying it for an hour? He said, yes, yes, that's best. And we stayed for 1 hour because apparently at that time there was a match. And wallahi, at the end of the match, I saw the people come. Half asleep again, but coming and saying, okay, tell us about the seerah. How can you claim that you love going back to Muhammad's sort of glimpses of the Prophet? This is exactly what I meant when I said, this is not true love. True love is that when you are fascinated with Tatum. This is true love. When the haircut is like X or Y. When the way you talk and walk and speak is like this singer or this actor. The love of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam demands more than this, demands more than the movement of the tongue. And Abdullah ibn Wahab demonstrated the extent of true love. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه هو